Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, we welcome Tomas Delgado from Candelas Guitars. Tomas is carrying on a three-generation tradition of making high-quality, handcrafted classical and flamenco guitars. We will speak with him about his craft and other traditional Latin American instruments. Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Floro de Izzo Flamenco Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We have a great one for you. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I am doing good.
Anything?
I've been busy. Been traveling again.
Yes, I saw you were over in Nashville.
Well, I went to Nashville 2 weeks ago, and then I was in Des Moines last week.
Oh, Des Moines.
Yeah, so going from the Appalachian Hills all the way to the cornfields of Iowa. So.
Oh, cool. How's the weather? The weather's good.
And then while I was in Iowa, I actually found a really cool guitar store. I ended up spending about an hour there talking with the owner. I think it was called like Pro Music or something. But man, if I ever lived there, that's where I would buy. So it was cool, cool place. Besides Sweetwater, of course.
But yes, yes. Well, of course. But any new videos coming out?
Yeah, probably a few more from NAMM will be coming out, and a few other things.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, listen, we got a great show. We got a bunch of people in studio tonight, so I'll get into that in a minute. But let's go ahead and take the break. When we get back, we'll be talking to Tomas Delgado and Candelas Guitars.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at sweetwater.com. Or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the Flow and then check it out online at sweetwater.com. Or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the Flow.
Hola, amigos. Hello, everyone. My name is Billy Sheehan, and I'm from the Winery Dogs, and you're watching the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts.
We are back. Okay, let's get started. This is a great show. I want to thank Monique, who's here today in studio with me, Monique Aravello, for putting this together. And it's really a pleasure to also have her back in studio. Our guest tonight is Tomas Delgado, and he's third generation of a group of guitar makers from native Los Angeles guitar makers, Candelas Guitars, that have been around, I think, from the 20s, somewhere in the 20s.
Yes.
And he brought some of the guitars and some players of the guitars. So I'll let Monique and Tomas introduce everybody that's here so everybody knows, and then we'll get into it.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited. I just have to tell everybody that I had a special interest in this because I was 8 when I had my first Candela's guitar. Because I grew up in Echo Park, which is just a little heartbeat away from Boyle Heights. And
where is that guitar now?
It got stolen.
Ooh.
Yeah, I had a lot of gear. It was either stolen or it was a garage sale where my dad just kind of said, everything is free. during a really bad spell. But, yeah, there was a period of time where I lost some gear. So, sadly, it's gone. But that's okay. I'll get another one soon.
We'll take care of that.
Yeah, we got to do that. We got to do that. But I do have a picture of it, and I did put it on Facebook, and I did send it to Tomas.
Oh, okay. I'll have to take a look at that. Check
yes.
That out.
So, yeah, special interest here for sure.
Well, Tomas, welcome to the show. And then
thank you.
Go ahead and introduce who's here and their specialty.
Okay. Well, first I want to say hello to my wife, Alegria.
Ah, okay.
My son, Tommy, buddy, and my beautiful daughter, Sophia. So
Hey, guys.
Wanted to say hello. well, I have 3 amazing performers here and good friends. We'll start with Dario Griffin, who I had the honor to make a classical guitar for him. He's a graduate of USC, a phenomenal player, has a lot of soul and heart and just an amazing player. Thank you for coming, Dario. And then we have Kenneth Del Rio, very good friend. He actually gives lessons at our shop at Candela's, and he's got a classical guitar. He plays classical, and amazing performer. A lot of attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have David Maldonado, who is playing a Blanca flamenca named after my wife Alegria, and he's an amazing performer, very versatile, and just a all 3 of these gentlemen are so kind and so pure and so giving to the music. I am blessed to have them in my life because they've given me so much more than I can ever give them.
Mm-hmm.
Very amazing men. So thank you guys.
Awesome.
Well, could you tell us then, now this is an interesting question, if you could tell us because you know all these guitars intimately.
Yes.
Just go down the line with Dario, go around and explain what you built for him, and then explain the guitar, and then Dario, each person can demo the guitar so they can hear a little bit. So if you could do that.
Well, Dario has a Brazilian spruce classical. He's like he's doing the Vanna White right now. It has French polish throughout. If you get a chance to go on the website here on the radio show and you take a look at the photos of his guitar, it's just breathtaking.
It's gorgeous.
And Dario is a very versatile player. As I said, he graduated from USC, classical guitar department. But he plays jazz, he plays steel string, he plays so much music, but he's a performer that the minute you hear him play, you can just get a feeling for what's inside of him. So, Dario, go for it.
It's got a real mellow tone to it, like a nice, deep, rich sound.
Yes, yes.
Now that body shape looks kind of small. What kind of shape would you compare that to?
Well, it's funny you say that because it is actually like a gran concierto. And it's bigger than the Granada-style guitars that were built back in the 30s, 50s, 60s. It's bigger than that. It looks small because Dario's a tall, big guy.
I am looking through whatever this is, face chat or something.
Yeah, the fingerboard is a 54. Is this a 54 millimeter on the nut? And so it's what I would consider the IndyCar design for classical guitar. It's got the wider fingerboard, so you can have plenty of room to do the classical and a little bit of everything on that guitar.
Yeah, I don't know if you can see it, Scott. The rosewood is highly figured.
It almost looks like it has blonde in it or something.
I didn't even recognize that as rosewood, but it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's big.
How do you obtain Brazilian rosewood, out of curiosity?
Well, here is where I become the spoiled brat here. My grandfather purchased Brazilian rosewood back in over 60 years ago. He bought a whole lot of it. And I've purchased some from other people here and there. But the bulk of what I have, my grandfather purchased over 60 years ago. I have matching sets of sides, backs of old growth Brazilian. I have head plates and matching bridge plates for Brazilian rosewood, and they are spectacular. I'll be honest with you, a lot of times I don't even want to build guitars with it. I just want to look at it. And these guys know very well. I have another set similar to Dario's, but not even close to this, but it is similar. And I haven't built it.
I wanted a cedar one.
Yeah, Dario's waiting for me to make a cedar guitar out of that. And I've been looking at that wood for what, 10 years?
You walk up to it and you're just like, look at it. Look at it. I'm like, do something. No, I don't want to build anything.
I just want to look at it. Because after I build it and it's gone, I don't get to see it anymore. But no, I have. In the 87 years we've been in business, one of the vices that we have is buying wood. And I've been buying material. My grandfather did, my father did, and I did the same for many years. I've actually promised myself I would not buy any more either rosewood or cypress, or I said I would take a break because I'm not going to live long enough to build more as many. I have enough wood in the shop to build I don't even know how many guitars.
So
what kind of spruce is that? Is it just regular Sitka or
no, that's European spruce.
Okay.
I have master grade Sitka. I have spruce from Switzerland. I buy German spruce. I have a variety of different spruce that I have at the shop. I have a master grade cedar for my tops. I have Brazilian rosewood, Indian rosewood, cypress, the Spanish cypress, Monterrey. I also have what I think is phenomenal. Here's a little something, is Turkish cypress. Oh my gosh, I bought the whole tree. That was my last purchase, but I bought all the master grade sets out of a tree from Turkey, and it was a pretty big supply of cypress. Yeah,
awesome.
Yeah.
How does do you ever use Adirondack, or is that not something commonly used for classical and flamenco?
Well, Adirondack spruce is typically used for steel string guitars, and it's gotten very popular more recently. And I actually have a couple sets at my shop because I have a friend of mine, Dan Castrita, also studied at USC. And he owns, I've built three guitars for him, and he's trying to get me to build them a steel string. So he says, use that Adirondack spruce. But he also brought up the idea of maybe using that for a flamenca, because, you know, typically for the type of tone that you're going to get out of a steel string, it may work for a flamenca. The thing I'm careful with is I don't like to build guitars with one or two sample pieces, because then if I like it and I'm successful with it, I can't find the rest of the stock of the tree. So when I buy wood, I will, if I'm going to build with Adirondack spruce, I'm going to buy probably 20 to 40 sets. And so when I build two or three guitars, and if I get more orders, I know how that top is going to react. I do see where some guys will be running, they'll get an order for a guitar, and then they start calling around trying to buy the wood, and that wood won't react the same way with the same type of bracing. So I'm really, really careful with that, and I've learned that through the years, because the material that I have, if I manipulate it just 2 to 3 millimeters throughout the whole build, I know how I can change the character of that guitar, because I've been working with that material for so long.
Awesome. We need to go back a little bit because you really didn't give a history of how you guys got started. I know it because, you know, we have history. But you need to talk about your grandfather and your uncle. And
yeah, the whole history of this, of the store.
The shop started, my grandfather's name was Porfirio, and his brother's name was Candelario. And they used to call them Los Hermanos Candelas, because short for Candelario was Candelas. So it was a catchy name. They started in Mexico back in the late 20s. And they moved from Torreón to Ciudad Juárez. And then they had friends, Juárez, Mexico. And then they had friends that had lived in Los Angeles. And they wanted to come visit them. And they decided to come visit, but they brought some guitars. Here's a cool, quick story. So they show up. They're with a friend of his that used to repair TVs. He said, I know a guy that might want to buy some of your guitars. They went and showed the man the guitars. My uncle said, take all the guitars down to my grandfather. He thought they sold all the guitars. They dropped the guitars off, and then my uncle says, pick up all the TVs. So they swap guitars for TVs. And he says, well, we could sell TVs in Mexico, and this man, hopefully he'll sell the guitars. So what happened was he sold all the guitars, and they started getting more orders for guitars. So that's when they chose to come over to L.A., and my grandfather stayed in Los Angeles. Then my father started in the late 60s, and then I came in thinking I was just going to play guitar at the shop. And I ended up falling in love with building. I got to apprentice with my grandfather and my dad before they passed away. And here I am, almost 30 years later.
Now, I mentioned in your bio that that you also went after your father and your grandfather had passed away, that you went off and studied more, that you went to learn more about guitar building. Where did you go?
I have gone to Europe several times to go visit other builders. I got to meet Jose Ramirez IV before he passed away. I stayed in Madrid and hung out with some of the shops and got in where I could. And last year I was in Paris. I went down the street Rue de Rome, who I have to thank Adam Del Monte for, because Adam said, go to that street, Tomas. They do French polish and try to get your way in. And I did. And I spoke to a couple people, and they showed me their techniques on how they do French polish. I've studied with an amazing man named Yuris, who owns Blue Guitar in San Diego. He's mm-hmm. been to my shop. He spent the day with me showing me his techniques at my shop, which was just a blessing. He's passing on a lot of his technique to me. Mm-hmm. I've taken frequency mill classes. I went to Fort Bragg, a gentleman's house there, and took a class there with a professor from Cambridge University. So I try to use some of a little bit of the new ideas and technology, but to be honest with you, I stick 99.
Most of it's still what you learned from your grandfather and your dad, right?
Yeah, I'm building old school guitars, and I'm trying to perfect the old school style of guitars and trying to maintain and soak as much sound as I can out of a mm-hmm. traditionally made guitar. Mm-hmm. I don't do lattice, or I won't do double tops. I won't work with any of those. Some of the artists that I spoke to, they say that, you know, those guitars, they have don't have a long life to them. And right. if they do get damaged, the cost to repair something like that and the character and the tone is all lost. They prefer the old school guitars.
Well, meeting some of those people in Spain, especially Ramirez, did you see really that much difference, or was there a lot of difference in the way they constructed the guitars, the bracing, as opposed to what your grandfather had taught you?
Well, it was difficult to find. In Madrid, it was difficult to find. The time that I was there, there was a lot of commercial building going on. There's a lot of the more production guitars. You really have to take the time to get the shop owners to open up and show you one of their handmade guitars that are priced a lot higher. Mm-hmm. But I did get to see some of that. And everybody has their own technique. It's not to say that one is right or wrong. As I've studied some of the old plans of Santos mm-hmm. Hernandez and Friedrich or Ramirez, as I've studied these builders, I think what they've done is a lot of these luthiers, they had access to the same material like I do. I buy a lot of the same material, and I have it. They've toyed with those specs, and once they found what works, like a 37 Hauser or a 33 Santos, or they have found those techniques that and those patterns and that material. Everything just came together at that point, and they were able to build what their ultimate guitars were. So a good friend of ours, Pepe Romero, my tio Candelas was Pepe Romero's godfather. And wow. Yeah, I've got a painting of Pepe Romero's at my shop.
That's awesome.
I got pictures of my dad and Pepe and Angel when they were like 10, 11, 12. And Pepe's been very kind to me, and he told me, stop building replicas. What you're doing with your design, stick with it and master it. And so, like some of these old builders that have built a good name for themselves, hopefully that will happen someday for me.
You on the site, you have more than just guitars. I can't even pronounce some of these. What's the difference between, because you do both flamenco and classical guitars,
mm-hmm.
what's the difference in construction? It's obviously very different styles, but can you go a little bit into what, you know, like the type of woods, how you have to build differently for the two? And then you had mentioned I think that Kenneth has kind of a hybrid.
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Well, it's when you, if we're going purist, old school flamenco and classical, there's an engineering and a design and a mathematics to a traditional flamenca. And then you can have a Granada style, you know, depending on what part of Spain the flamenco is coming from. But typically a flamenco player, if he's a true, pure flamenco player, is going to want a bridge height of about 5.5 to 6 millimeters. And the guitar has to be engineered, and the angles have to be such that the tension has to be, again, I've studied, I think we went almost 3 weeks or 4 weeks studying just character of tension. Adam Del Monte, he worked with me on that, and he said, this is what I like, this is the tension, I don't know the mathematics of it. So I studied the guitars and understood what he's looking for. But now, like, David has his style, and he tells me what he likes. So my job is to make a flamenca, traditional flamenca, with the correct specs, the weight, under 3 pounds. Mine are, the guitar that David has right now is 2 pounds, 12 ounces.
Oh, wow, that's pretty light.
That's very light, yes.
And yes, I'm lifting it right now, and it's very, very light.
Very light,
but
yes.
The tension on that is higher tension than a classical?
No, the tension, it's still, this that one actually is a 650 scale. The angles on the guitar are what will make it play like a flamenca. The material on the guitar is what makes it a flamenca blanca. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the bracing and everything is what gives it the overtones, the colors, and the character that each individual is looking for. So putting it all together, that is a traditional flamenca. Now, you will find other luthiers building flamencas with all these different materials. Some of them because they want to experiment, and others because maybe they just don't have access to some of the old material.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at what David has, my way of sort of showing off is Brazilian rosewood on the headstock,
mm-hmm.
Brazilian rosewood on the bridge. Mm-hmm. In today's world, not a lot of luthiers have access to put Brazilian rosewood on a Blanca Flamenca, and I have plenty of it.
Right.
So that's, you know, it's pretty
nice. Let me ask David, as a player, because you play both styles, and is that a lighter tension on that guitar? Is that a lighter, like a lighter gauge, so to speak, or do you like it tighter?
I like a heavy, hard tension, you know, extra heavy tension. But as far as flamenco, because of the percussiveness, you know, it could cause a lot of problems with that. So in classical, I'm going to use extra heavy tension. But on the flamenca, since there's so much percussiveness, I don't need that much tension, you know, and there's not that hard of tension on this flamenca, which is perfect because I'm an old school flamenco player, you know, I'm not doing like any of the new stuff. So this guitar has, like, the first time I played it in the shop was just like amazing. So it's hard to say that because I played so many and just on one playing that is so perfect, you know, it was just amazing.
Well, show us a little bit in terms of flamenco technique. What that kind of demonstrates what you need from the guitar. So in other words, you're talking about a very percussive type of sound. Go ahead.
So for this, you know, let's say like a style is called alegrías, right? And it's kind of like a happy melodic type, but and then there's dissonance too for the percussive. Control on it, because if it was any heavier than that, there'd be too many overtones going on. Mm-hmm. But I have, like, I can grab it and shut up, you know, or, you know, make it just like sharp and, you know, percussive.
Yeah, I noticed your nails are fairly long compared to a lot of classical players.
Yeah, and that's interesting.
So you're using more nail than flesh on that.
Yeah, and it depends where I am and what kind of concerts I'm doing. So yesterday I did almost like pure flamenco concerts. I'm like trying to make them grow a little bit because I did some shows and I'm just like, oh, there's nothing there. And so it's interesting that they are a little bit longer, especially for flamenco, because of all the rasqueados, you know. Yeah. It does get a little bit in the way for the picados. So I have to get used to the longer ones again for the...
Yeah, well, much more percussive style. Mm-hmm. Now, Tomas, now, I know that a classical guitar is a deeper sounding, especially with the rosewood. Can you explain, go through the woods on this, and I guess the flamenca blanca is a specific type of wood, and then why that wood? I'm sure it's because it cuts more, because he's playing really percussive and really aggressively.
That's a cypress sides and back with a spruce top. Spanish cedar neck, rosewood bridge, Brazilian rosewood head plate. It's got the pegs, ebony fretboard, and the whole guitar, I French polished the whole guitar. So that's the finish that's done by hand with a pad. And Blanca, again, Cyprus, the flamencas back in the day were the gypsies didn't have a lot of money. That was the affordable material. In my studies, what I'm doing in French polish, if we were gypsies back in the 20s, 30s, we got that wood, we couldn't afford a lot, so put a quick coat of French polish, and vamos, let's go play.
Now, you do gloss finishes too, right?
Well, I do three stages of French polish, and I also can do... I do two stages of lacquer. I don't try to do the third stage of lacquer.
Okay, and but sonically, what's the difference between the French polish and then putting the lacquer on there? Is there a difference?
The French polish will give you a very, depending on the stages, we can become more organic or less organic, but still organic in the French polish. Mm-hmm. When you get into the lacquer, you tend to get a little more power, a little more sustain and depth and strength. And we can definitely add that to any of the guitars that are French polish. Like the one Kenneth has is lacquer throughout, but the top is French polish. And that's done on purpose. I actually worked with Kenneth on that about 4 years ago, where Kenneth was like, Tomas, the sound of the French polish is amazing, but the lacquer too, but let's mix them up. I go, all right, I'll try it. Let's mix it up. I go, you know, let's do it. He has an amazing ear. And so I started blending it. And the best way I can put it is through the years of studying, through the years of restoring some of these old vintage guitars as well that I have at my shop that I've collected. The best way I can put it is I started sort of referring myself as a chef. If we all... I tell everybody, we all like chile rellenos. My job is to make sure that I make it for you with the cheese that you like, and for David with the salsa that he likes, and Kenneth and Dario, but they're still chile rellenos.
Yeah.
So if I'm gonna make a flamenca, it has to be a flamenca with that little those little details that makes it for you, mm-hmm. because not every you're you. It has to be for you, and that's why I was mentioning to Monique here that in order to do that, you just have to slow down and build them one at a time. And yeah. You can't really.
Tomas, which is thicker, the French polish or the lacquer?
Well, that's what I was getting at. The French polish stage one. If I were to tell you I'm going to make you a stage one French polish guitar, it would be probably the lightest finish you would ever see on a guitar. Super sensitive, very delicate, but that would be the thinnest. Stage two would be a thicker French polish. Stage three would be, a very thick, sort of, I'm trying to impress you with the glossy look French polish. And I do the same thing with lacquer, stage one, two, and three. And all of them are done for sound. In my studies, I've learned that some of the best guitars still do show a bit of the human side of the finish in French polish. Nowadays, you are getting a lot of guys that are supposedly French polishing, and they look like deep lacquer, and they're flawless. But they're some of the old school guys said, we remember looking at some of the old Spanish guitars. You could see their brush strokes. You can lightly see, and they prefer that. To know that it was done by hand, that's how I do it.
I think it's interesting. I've never heard of any mixing the technique. So you have the French polish on the top and the lacquer on the. I think that's kind of interesting. It makes sense. It makes a lot of sense. But talking about Kenneth's guitar, now that's the hybrid guitar.
So yes, today we're finding that there are people that classical guitar players, working performers, sometimes need something that can be more versatile. You may have to play a little classical, a little flamenco, but Kenneth's guitar is a negra, not only in the body because it's the engineering is flamenco, but the sides and back are rosewood, and the top on this guitar is actually cedar. And I used to get into it with everybody maybe a while ago when people say, well, flamencos are not cedar. Well, I own a 69 Ramirez 1A Blanca, and it's cedar top. It's a flamenca. Mm-hmm. And so I chose to make this for that reason, to say, look, this could be considered a flamenco, but it has the warm, deep tones like a classical. You can hear Kenneth, if you wouldn't mind playing a little something for us.
I mean, and it's funny that you mentioned the hybrid, because I think I talked to you a lot about that when I first met you when I was 17. Like, I want a guitar that kind of does both of it, because I love classical, a little bit like the Spanish music. You want to give it the nice, the flair, and I feel this guitar does that. So if I want to do like some of those gallows, like. I still get that, But if I ever want to kind of roll it back and I want to play classical, I get that too.
Kenneth, do me a favor and play more less nail and more finger to kind of get the warmth. What impresses me a lot is the fact that I can hear all the inner strings that you're playing. It's very clear, and as a recording instrument, looking at it from that aspect, it's bright and articulate, so it cuts. And without being, I mean, the flamenco cuts, it really cuts, but I mean, it still works as a recording instrument. You like to have that so you can mix it in and out and stuff. And I notice all of the guitars I think that you can hear when you're doing a lot of counterpuntal stuff and you have like inner mm-hmm. voices, it all comes out really clear. And I've played, you know, my classical guitar isn't the best classical guitar in the world, and it's really hard to bring that out.
That yeah. We need to work on that.
Okay. Yeah. At what rate are you building? I mean, how many guitars do you build?
Well, you know, you mentioned the website, and I guess we should touch on that. Part of where I'm at is I'm advertising and showing a lot of the stuff that I can do, and maybe in some cases stuff that I have done. You know, back in the 40s, when my grandfather and my uncle weren't able to sell guitars, they made ukuleles for a store called Shearson Brothers in downtown L.A., because the owner said, hey, can you make ukuleles? And they're like, yeah, you know, we'll make
ukuleles. Scott, these are cool ukuleles. I was looking on the site.
Yeah,
he's a big collector.
Oh, is he? Yeah, I've made the replicas of the Nunez. I've done some of the Martins. And so I guess what I'm getting at is when I was younger and, you know, I was really trying to build a little bit of everything and also to keep my shop open. And so part of the plus side, or, you know, you can look at it both ways, is I can build a bunch of different instruments, but now definitely those things are starting to slow down. To build cuatros and jaranas and things like that, those days are sort of starting to slow down. I don't have a lot of...
I don't know too many people that make that stuff. That's unless you go to Mexico directly.
Yeah, it's becoming more popular. Especially with the studying on the classical and the flamenco now, when and if I choose to make an ukulele or a cuatro or a vihuela, it's so hard not to put so much time and effort into it.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder, okay, I got to be careful where I put a lot of my time. So I wait for orders. Basically, for me, if you really want me to build something for you, I want to do it. If you don't, then I don't. I'm good with it. And if you ask me for an ukulele and you want me to make it of this quality, I would love to do it. Mm-hmm. But it's hard. I'm not inspired unless I need to be inspired. Mm-hmm. Right now, the last 5 or maybe 8 years now, the real big focus has been flamenco and classical.
So it's just you building them?
No, I have... this is the way I make it clear to everybody. I have an assistant. Her name is Loretta. She runs the store. She opens and closes during the week and answers the phone. I couldn't do what I do without her. And I have a full-time assistant in the back helping me. And I have another guy that's sort of part-time that comes and goes,
you know.
But the guitars that you're seeing here, I build them myself. And we do, when if we're doing the ukuleles or maybe a norteño bajo sexto instrument, we'll do those as a team. But on these guitars and on the custom orders, it's just you can't afford a mistake.
How long does it take to build a guitar?
Well, something like this. Now, I personally am only making, at this point now, I'm only making about 6 to 8 guitars a year. So I just finished a Brazilian rosewood a week ago, and it took me about, total time was about 5-6 months.
Yeah, that's it's hard to, when you have to really look at these guitars up close, and looking at them, you can see the care and the detail on the way these guitars are built. Right. It's hard to describe that over the air, but it takes time to do that, and those finishes are just immaculate too. And
yeah, I know a lot of luthiers, even some of the people that I've studied with, they just say, why would you do a whole guitar French polish, Tomas? It makes no sense, you know? And I'm like, well, because I want to. And part of the reason why I can, a little different, the difference between my situation and maybe a luthier that's building in his backyard, the plus side is, you know, I have my own line of strings, and we sell them very affordable, but it's something that I worked on with SIT strings years ago. Mm-hmm. And they're gracious of giving me that, and that helps supplement some of the income of the shop. Mm-hmm. Some of the designs on cases and accessories, things that I've come up with. It's a retail store, so that helps. You know, if I need to sell strings or little accessories here and there, cases or whatever, But the back is a full-blown shop. So I think I can feel as I get older, maybe a lot of that's going to go away. But I think the value comes in where, because I have that helping me run the store, I can still make my guitars affordable. Because as I do go and I travel and I see the guys that are actually hand-making their guitars, they're about 40% more than I am. And the guys that are forced to sell through dealers, those dealers are marking up those guitars.
Yeah.
Or I don't have to do that. So
dare I ask, what would a custom order guitar with Brazilian cost?
Right now, it starts at $18,000.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I have a Fritz Sorbert, who I think is a great builder, and I think those guitars go for about $30,000 or plus now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's...
For rock and rollers, that's a steep price, but I know guys that have the classical guitars, and we had Andrew York in here and Cannon Geyser. Yeah, it's about the right price. They're they're paying that much. But that's, again, that's handmade, and 6 months, that's a lot of labor. So, I mean,
And I have the wooden board feet. A lot of times I'll let you come in and you can select the wood. You can pick your sides and backs and all that. I'm in a position where I'm trying to price myself affordable, which is keeping me busy. And that's what I want. I want to be busy. But more importantly, I want to please people. I want to make sure that they're really happy with what I'm making. So...
I thought that was an interesting part of the history, that you guys had five shops at one point, or no, not all at once, but...
No, we did, actually.
They were all at once?
My uncle went back to... For your rock and rollers, I'll give you a little history, and I think this will be cool. My grandfather and my uncle were at the shop in Brooklyn, right there on Brooklyn Avenue in Boyle Heights.
Mm-hmm.
In comes this man selling T-shirts and pins and, like, promotional stuff for businesses.
Right.
And he's trying to convince my Uncle Candelas to buy some of his stuff. My uncle's like, no, I'm not this interested, whatever. And my uncle's like, hey, let's have a drink or whatever. This man and him start having a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I tell you what, I'll buy some of your stuff, but you buy half of my shop here. And the man's like, what? I don't know anything about guitars. He goes, that's fine. My brother Porfirio will build them, and you will sell them. You're a salesman, so sell them. So after having some drinks, he convinced that man. That man's name was Bernardo Rico. Okay, he had a son named Barney Rico, who used to come in and sand guitars for my grandfather. And through the history from Mexico, building one piece jaranas and requinto jarochos, those instruments that come from Veracruz, they had the idea of building a one piece classical guitar. Now, this is a little mixed. I have a photo of Celedonio Romero doing his instructional book with a one piece Candelas classical guitar. And Barney, the young boy, is working for my grandfather, sanding guitars and doing this and that. Well, the father comes in. Barney would leave whenever he wanted to. The dad's, where's my son? They get into it. My grandfather's like, I'm not babysitting your son. We're done. We're not working together anymore. That son ended up starting BC Rich Guitars. Yeah.
That's right. No, when I first heard about BC Rich, they were doing a lot of repairs for Martin guitars. Yeah. And some of the Gibsons, they were repairing them, and then they started building their own guitars, and they started with acoustic guitars, and did, besides classical, they did steel string, and then it changed over, and the rest is history.
Yeah. That kind of went to the right, though. My whole point was they've kept one shop, which I think has kept it
custom. It's very purist. Personal. I mean, at least you haven't drifted.
Well, and this is what happened was my uncle loved Mexico. Mm. So my uncle, by doing that deal, got the money he needed to go back to Mexico. And he kept his store in Mexico. And then my dad, in the 70s, 80s, got the idea of opening several stores, because that was the idea, right? Franchising. Open up stores, expand. So we had a shop on Sunset and Cahuenga, just up the street from Guitar Center. And Valdez was across the street from Guitar Center.
Right.
And my dad knew Dan DiMartino, who I guess was the bigwig at Guitar Center back in the 70s, 80s. And that man used to give my dad a ton of repairs. At that time, my dad was doing like a nut and a saddle for like $20. And all the guys local went to my dad and I'm like, what are you doing? We're charging $50, $60 for this. And my dad, you know, he's a pretty big guy. He didn't really, he was like, I don't care. You guys charge whatever you want. I'm going to do what I want. And he stayed busy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so we had the shop on Sunset in Hollywood. We had the shop on Sunset and Figueroa over by the Department of Water and Power.
Wow.
And then we had the original shop. But my dad got sick, had a mild heart attack. And he said, that's it. He shut everything down, and we had the small shop right there in Brooklyn. And then I came in, and I said, you know, I guess a new set of legs. Here we go. We're moving, moving, moving. And then I said, Dad lives by the building. And he said, son, that's it. You know, he just found out he had cancer. So after he passed away, I pursued and I bought the building. And I vowed that there will never, I'm never leaving there, and there will not be another Candelas anywhere else. And there isn't. That's the only.
No, I think that's great. I mean, it's part of that area where, oh, yeah, where, you know, that's part of the whole, you know, your roots. But did your dad, did he know Valdez?
Oh,
Valdez,
yeah,
worked on one of my guitars. He was pretty famous back then.
Yeah, Art used to, super cool guy. I just talked to somebody about him recently. He used to drive buses, and he got into the guitar business. And he got into building, and he took a dive, and he bought that building where he was at, and he did really well. And we were good friends for a long time. Unfortunately, he's ill, and they've closed his shop down. And their family just brought me a bunch of instruments to repair for them, and some of his guitars and some other stuff. And
so he's still alive. I didn't know he was still alive.
Yeah, remember I told you I was down there recently and I talked to him, Mark.
I have Mark's guitars at my shop.
He was an interesting guy because he worked on my Les Paul. He shaved the neck on my Les Paul. And one of the things that he did that I thought was really cool is he explained it to me when he was doing it, is he put a shim on the back of the headstock where the pegs, the tuning pegs go, mm-hmm, to lower the shaft of the tuning key where you put you thread the string. And he said by lowering it and at the angle of the headstock, it gave it more tension. And I thought that, he goes, it'll make a difference. And I said, okay, go ahead and do it. Because I brought Grover's. I was changing the whole thing. And he took out the heel and made that guitar just immaculate. It was great. And he did a great job on the frets. But I had heard at the time that he had done work for Clapton and Stephen Stills and stuff. And it was pretty well known. But
he was in a good location. I mean, he was...
Right, buy your guitar, say, hey, take it over here. Let's shave that neck. Exactly. Okay, fine.
Yeah, he was doing scallop fretboards. And he was doing doing a lot of different stuff. And I think a lot of builders, Rodriguez and even from Spain, and they were really coming up with a lot of funky ideas. And I remember my grandfather, when I started working, he says, you know what, Nico, there's been so many things. Guys are still going to try new stuff, and there's been a lot of this stuff has already been done already. We're going to stay to the traditional guitar. And you'll find that it'll come back. It'll stay. And thank the good Lord that I had my grandfather alive and I got to work with him, because that is what the old school stuff comes back.
Well, it's like you said, like once you know the properties of this type of wood, you know what's going to work best for it. And I think that's really what it is. You have to you got to remember in those days when everybody was trying to mass produce, even in the acoustic guitars, you know, some of the stuff that they did pre-war, like Martin, they did scallop the braces and stuff to make it vibrate more. And in the 60s, it was like more heavy duty. Let's just get it in there so it doesn't break, because they're going to go on the road and they're going to smash it. And that affected it. So guys like Stills would take their guitars to Valdez to scallop the bracing and all that stuff just to get the guitar to breathe more and play more. But like you said, you know what you need to do. Now it's a matter of just maximizing the potential of the woods that you're using on the guitar. And I think that's the key. That's where your experience is really coming into play, because you know what to do to make that wood sound. I mean, these guitars sound distinctively different, but they all have a great, rich sound and very musical and very applicable and versatile enough, even though they're that different. I mean, obviously, a flamenco guitar is way different than a classical, but they're I don't know how to describe it. They're versatile. The sound of it you can use it a lot of different things.
Sure. And again, the important thing is that I can, is making something, I don't take any credit other than just, maybe the credit would be that I'm staying true to the original traditional guitar. Mm-hmm. At first, it was difficult not to try to reinvent this and try to flash everybody, be all excited about, I'm going to do this different, this different. No. It's nice to feel relaxed and say, I'm just going to stay within the traditional. But I have to buy or go find some of these old guitars. And through the years, I've been fortunate to collect some pretty right. amazing guitars. And it's great because when you get that one client that says, well, you know, if this guitar was... If you had a 57 this or a 69, oh, I do. And I take it out. Okay, here, compare it. You want to spend 50 grand, here it is. Or I can build you something for $7,000 or $8,000. Yeah. Or, you know.
Well, the interesting thing is that each guitar that you make, because you're making them in the woods that you're using are different, they're going to have a unique personality. But at the same time, there's a consistency that everybody try, you know, a lot of the newer companies by computer making them, they are consistent. Correct. They are getting them pretty well. I mean, they're doing it, but mm-hmm. there's a difference because each of your guitars has, that's the whole handmade thing. There is a it's very subtle, but it makes that guitar your own. It has its own, and each of these guitars here, they have their own personality, and that's what makes them special. But I have to admit that I've handled a couple of the necks on here. They're very consistent. For handmade, that's something to say because that's hard to keep it that consistent. I know you're probably know it by feel, just intuitively, how to get the neck right. But I mean, I'm saying is they're all very similar in playability to me in terms. I mean, you know, there's some differences with the
mathematics have now become my safety net.
Yeah.
I have blueprints now, which has really helped me a lot. And it's, the blueprints keep me focused and give me that, it's that my security blanket. But then when I meet the individual, then I can go off of that and know where I'm going to go too far to sacrifice this sound or that sound. Mm-hmm. And again, I think it's important to note that I have three young artists here who are all old souls. They are amazing. I have handed guitars to these three gentlemen and then taken the guitars that they choose. They'll tell me, well, Tomas, and they know me very well. A lot of times I'd rather hear the negative more than the positive stuff. And because that's what's going to make me better. And when Dario says, I don't know, I like that one more than this one. And if Kenneth says the same, yeah, well, now I can see it. And David, the same. I can take those guitars to other artists, and it's universal. But these guys are close to me. They're passionate. They come to the shop. So it's like a crutch for me. I can show these guys the guitars.
Well, we were talking a little bit just before the show. Yes, you're getting input from working musicians that are using the guitars. And so they're going to have certain needs as players. And they need, you know, so you're addressing that. But also, too, don't sell yourself short because you're a player. You know, he was playing a little bit before we heard him play. And that has a lot to do with it because you're coming from that experience. And that makes you, you know, it's one thing to program or build a guitar and you're not a player. That's one thing, but you don't know. When you play, you know. And a lot of what works and what you know intuitively is right is from your playing. And I think that's what makes it even more special because of the fact that you are as a player. And that's why you get the feedback from these guys. There's a commonality. You can relate to what they're doing because you play yourself. To me, I think that's invaluable.
Yeah, thank you. Again, a credit to my dad pushing me to play guitar.
Well, I'm sure your grandpa and your great uncle and your dad are smiling right now because I think you've kept the tradition. This is amazing, and it's always cool to see. You know, you're not. You know, look what happened with Fender when it was bought out corporate and stuff. Fender makes good stuff still, but it was better when it was a little shop, you know what I mean? At least
Absolutely.
For me.
Oh, and it's a blast. I mean, if you, I think you'll hopefully come visit the shop.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I just love it there. I have so much fun. It's just a blessing. And Kenneth gives lessons at the shop, and he's got a studio in the back, and to watch the students walk by while I'm working and watch them leave with this smile on their face. There's no pressure. I've positioned myself in a situation where it's a very kickback environment. There's no...
That's cool. Well, you're doing what you love to do, and it's that's the whole game. It's like to do what you love.
Yeah.
And you're doing it, and it's great. Awesome. We're already out of time. I told you we'd go fast.
Wow.
I mean, it flew. Anyway, www.candelas.com is the website, and you can get information where they're located, their phone number. Go visit them and check out the place and check out the guitars.
And can I say hi to Loretta and Nadine, her daughter? Loretta's
yes,
my assistant.
Well, Loretta, thank you, because she helped us put everything together for you. And
she's
was a blessing.
Neat lady.
And real quick, DavidMaldonado.com. Check out his site, and he has a new CD. I threw it in my bag. It's El Amor. I'm terrible. Di mi alma?
El Amor de mi alma.
There we go. So new CD.
I played a little segment. When I played a little segment, it's going to be up for a Latin Grammy. So if anyone
awesome.
Listening is a Recording Academy member, nice. Look out for it. Listen for it. And... You know,
okay.
Right on.
And then
right
on. DarioGriffin.com, Dario. And let us know also, too, when you're playing, and I'll post it up on the Flow site when you're playing locally. And Kenneth, yeah. I know you teach. You just told me you teach, but you got to gig more. Come on.
Thank you. Well,
come on, you're too awesome. Not to.
Appreciate that.
No, you guys are awesome, and you guys are great players. I'm humbled. Monique, thank you. Also, Monique, you can catch over on her Facebook page. And if you need any work on guitars.
Yep.
Other than classical guitars.
we don't want to take his
She's
work,
done
right?
wonders to my Les Paul. It plays great.
So. Awesome.
But anyway, before as we go out, everybody, guys, want to just go ahead and do a little jam to take us out. And thank you again. It was just a pleasure.
Thank you.
And we
want to
thank Sweetwater.
Guys.
Yes, thanks, Sweetwater. Mm-hmm. And Scott, I'll see you next week. Hang on. I'll talk to you after the show. But everybody have a great week. And thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm.